So from December until March, April, I went to anywhere in the country that I knew that I had parts. There was a crash in Alaska. Don Whittington had a bunch of stuff out of the scrap yard in Fairbanks where they had scrapped the remaining 1382s that went to Alaska, which were H models with heated leading edge and all that, to operate in Alaska to guard against the Russians coming across. But in 53, they're all scrapped. He went up there after that and bought a bunch of parts. And then there's a woman in St. Pete that had a canopy, and another man in
Florida.
In Florida.
St. Pete, yeah.
In Florida. Yeah. Another man in North Carolina had a canopy. And that was unique. Someone tried to buy that canopy from us. Said, we'll give you thousands of dollars for a canopy. He says, no. He says, it's going to go to this airplane because I know it's going to go on. I said, well, how much do you want for it? He said, it's free if it's going to go on the airplane. Wow. So I went. They called me in March or April, and I went up there. And they said, I said, well, how much do you want for the airplane? She said, well, it's $60,000. And I say, what does that mean? I said, it's worth more than that, knowing Walter had all the parts. I could not make Walter upset because he was upset about a previous sale to a Corsair. So I just figured he's the only person that's got the parts. So I held my finger up. She said, what does that mean? I said, it's worth more than that. And Walter said, I never had anybody offer me more than something that I asked for. I'll tell you when to stop. Wow. So the figure went to 80, 100. And I said, okay. I wrote him a check. He went throughout the house. He said, the landing gear is here. The hydraulics are over here. The belly scoop is down in the coal cellar, you know, here and there. He had endless parts. So he gathered up all the parts, put them in a container, shipped the airplane home, contracted with all the people that I put down payments to for all the other parts, got all them back. And then Walter would find more parts, Margaret would find more parts, and they'd call me, and I'd come up there with my truck and pick them up. And while I was up there, I looked underneath a pile of scrap B-52 parts. I said, they look like Mustang parts. There were the remaining 82 parts that had come back from NACA after they had crushed them. So I ended up with a complete airplane.
From the same airplane originally?
Same airplane. So I ended up getting all the rest of the parts. Now, some of them were usable. A lot of them weren't because they had been run over by a bulldozer. But between going throughout the world looking for 82 parts and making a whole bunch, we ended up with a complete airplane.
So then you went to work to put this together. What was that process like?
Well, we hired a bunch of sheet metal people, and we're a sheet metal shop. And we worked on it for 11 and a half years. In the meantime, more people would read about, we'd have a new monthly news release that would go out. And then people would hear about it. They'd say, we have a throttle quadrant. We have this, we have that. Everything is magical about this airplane. Virtually nothing has gone wrong. One instance, I was walking into the crash site in Alaska. We could land the helicopter one spot on a 360-degree circle. There are only five parts on this airplane that are the same as a Mustang. Everything else is different.
Different, wow.
Same technology, but the parts are only five. The canopies are different. We didn't have any canopies. So I figured we're going to have to make canopies for scratch. The airplane that had fatally crashed in Alaska, in Fairbanks, Alaska, right south of Ladd Air Force Base, was about a mile inland where we could land next to the river where the blaze of the helicopter would not hit trees. So we landed there. Now, what were the chances of landing on that spot compared to anywhere else in a big circle? So we landed there. And I dropped colored tape on the top of the wispy trees where the wreck site was. It was found there by Dick Hodgers many years earlier. Crashed there in 1949. So anyway, I'd stop and I'd spread the trees and see the yellow tapes. Compasses don't work up there. So I'm walking in, and I'm about halfway in, about a quarter of a mile in, half a mile in, I come across a jettison canopy where one pilot tried to get out. What were the chances? Then, 1953, when they were doing away with the 82 from North American at Englewood, the head design person says, take all this microfiche for the V-25, the Mustang, and the T-82, and bring it outside and burn it in a 55-gallon drum. The man took it, instead of burning it, put it in the trunk of his car. and sold it to Lowell Ford in California, who presented me with the plans. It just goes and goes and goes and goes like that.
If this wasn't true, I'd say you made it all up.
Yeah.
God. So at some point, you have to take all of these pieces and make this airplane. How long a process was that?
That was 11 and a half years and 209,000 man and woman hours.
Man.
And a number of my employees and volunteers are here. We had a lot of volunteers.
Hey, well, raise your hands. Everybody who worked on this project, raise your hands.
So.
Yeah. And supplotas.
We had an eight-person paid airframe power plant IA inspection authorization crew, and we worked on it for full time for 11 and a half years.
How much of this doing this is passion, and how much is obsession?
That's hard to answer, but I've been in the business my 48th year now. Yeah. And I love building airplanes that people say can't be done. And we had a pile of wreckage out of Alaska, and they looked at that and said, there's nothing there usable. I said, oh, yeah, it is. A lot of it's copyable. You know, we spent a huge amount of money for non-destructive inspection, for X-ray and Magnaflux, and paying machinists to make new parts and stuff like that. I always knew I would get it done. It's just how much time and how much money.
So in the process of putting it all together, were there moments when you started to think, uh-oh, we finally have hit a stumbling block here and we can't get past that?
Never.
My gosh.
Never. One of the biggest problems was I had 20-plus pilots call me and they said, we want to fly the airplane. We want to be the first to fly. Now, I've flown Mustangs, but I'm not qualified to fly an 82. From the very beginning, I chose Ray Fowler. Everybody else go, yeah, but we have this, no, I'm choosing Ray Fowler. He will be the pilot. That was it.
Now, why is that? And this is terrific because this will tell you about Ray Fowler. Why Ray Fowler?
Well, the only thing he hasn't flown yet is a space shuttle.
It's not true.
He flies everything. And he's one of the most experienced pilots in a Mustang. You know, he flies Corsair, B-17, B-24, FW-190, P-38, on and on and on, and there's probably 50
Cessna
airplanes.
Cessna 182.
And P-82. So I made a lot of people unhappy because I made the decision from the very beginning it was going to be Ray Fowler. I don't care what you say, it's going to be Ray Fowler. That's it.
Right.
And that's what it was.
As a matter of fact, Ray, was that you flying the film we saw earlier on the jumbo? You were.
That was 2 days ago, yes.
Oh, yeah. That was here.
Yeah, it was here.
Oh. He's the only P-82 pilot in the world now.
But there's only one P-82, so there's not a big demand for us.
So anyway, we now have 28 hours on the airplane.
A little over 20, I think. So
28 hours and about 25 landings. And it's been amazingly squawk-free. Except for we had a little small hydraulic leak in here this morning that we're addressing. You saw us in there working on it.
Right. Let me back up for just a second. Bud Anderson, whom everybody here knows and who is here with us all week, where does Bud come into this from his test career?
Well, he flew this very airplane.
A small world.
I can't tell you when, but the first 22 were stateside. This is the second, but the first to fly. They were held stateside as trainers and stuff like that. The other prototype went to the big place on the East Coast, Norfolk.
Norfolk, yeah, or Virginia Beach.
And it was scrapped in '53, but because of the supplotas, this and many other airplanes survived.
So, what did Bud have to say about his memory of testing this airplane?
It's fast. It's just strange because you're in the left seat flying and you look to the right and there's another fuselage over there, you can have a midair. But it's fast, it's heavy. It's heavier on the controls than the Mustang, but Ray can tell you all about that.
Right, right. So what happened? Was it last December 31st? Was that the day?
December 31st.
Just recent, 12/31, yeah.
I knew it was going to fly, and he knew it was going to fly.
I hoped it was going to fly.
Yeah, and it was a cold day, and I said to him,
where
I said,
where was this?
This is in Douglas, Georgia, is where I'm based. I was in Kissimmee, Florida, and Hurricane Charlie had different ideas. There's Pat Harker sitting right there. Raise your hand, Pat. He's doing a magnificent job on an F-82 E model, yeah. Right there. I just noticed him right there. Pat has been very helpful to us because he had a complete airplane, and he would allow us to come up and take measurements and copy things and so forth like that. Without him, we'd be far behind where we are now. Thank you. So anyway, I said to Ray, I said, do a high-speed taxi. We have 6,000-foot runway. We have a 6,000-foot runway. But if you think it's marginal, go. And I watched it. It lifted off in less than 2,000 feet. And I was going to put it back down again. I went, he's not going to stop. And he flew.